At this point in the process, there's just no chance to even come up with some kind of intro.
Why would we want to?
I mean, well, just for the sake of the audience and a formality so that they know what's going on, but this far in.
Yeah.
The energy, the amount of verve and vim that you're able to draw to you is low. It's just really low.
It is really low. It's tough. It's hard being a movie podcast when there aren't any movies in the movie 11 theater.
Well, we pulled it off.
Yeah.
11 minus 4 is 7. So seven months. 7 months.
It seems longer than that. It seems longer than that. Is that how long we've been doing
seven
the show?
Times 41 times 2. 82 movies.
Yeah.
Ugh. Ugh. Not a good sales pitch for the show.
No.
But, oof, boy.
Do you think over half of them have been good?
Mm.
I want to say yes.
Snap decision, yes.
Yeah, right.
After today, hard to say.
The percentage of good has gone down.
Yeah, start to look into it a little more. Maybe 48%. But yeah, I mean, you know. And then, like, there's some things that are like an education where it's like, right. Oh, I didn't love that. Like, the movie I picked today is like, it wasn't my favorite, but okay. Now I've entered in a conversation that I probably should have entered a long time ago. Although,
sure.
Let's be fair, it's a kind of obscure film. Thanks, Criterion Collection.
Right.
And then there's other things that are like, sure, they're part of the lexicon in
right.
a lot of ways, but you watch it and you go, I think I didn't have to.
I didn't
got
have
that.
To watch that. Yeah.
I think right. That's 2.5 hours that kiss that goodbye. But
I feel maybe that's like a lot of the films that are on my list, unfortunately. And I really hope that the majority of them don't fall into that. I mean, I suppose I can always look at my list and try to cull it, but it's like I put it on my list for a reason. Right.
Yeah, it wasn't a good reason necessarily. I don't know. Maybe when we hit 50, we'll definitely retrospect when we hit 50, right?
Yeah, that probably would be a good
idea. That
only
makes sense.
Yeah.
But that's even that it will be probably around the first of the year. So maybe that'll be a looking forward in 2021, looking back
sure.
into 2020.
Yeah, that's probably a pretty good idea.
My eyes, I'm blind. I looked back at 2020.
Yeah.
But
pretty much.
Maybe that's what we can do.
It's pretty bleak.
Bleak goes with our selections today.
Yeah, actually.
And as is the tradition, you won the toss, which means that we're
it's
talking
rigged,
about your
everybody.
Movie first.
Yeah. So my movie is The Color Purple.
Yes, it is. Well, you just trailed off. I don't.
Oh, I thought I was passing it to you, but you were
it's
like,
your movie.
You were like, I don't want that.
I don't. So... I didn't at any point.
Okay. So let me talk about why I picked this. I mean, obviously it's based on a book. It's based on Alice Walker's book, which I think you told me came out in the 80s.
1982.
I didn't realize that.
This
I
film
thought it
came
out
in 1985.
So it came out relatively. It was, you know, at the time, both the book and the film were quite the sensation.
Yeah.
And pretty popular.
Yeah, this is like the 50 Shades of Grey of the early
whoa,
to mid 80s.
I don't think I want to put that on it.
It is in that
you think a lot of
no one talks about this film anymore at all. And I always wondered why that was. Even when I was becoming a teenager and I was becoming interested in films, but
yeah.
I still they were sort of illicit and it was tough to get my hands on them. But I would go to video stores. And I would, knowing that there would never be a purchase or a rental, and I would walk around through the aisles and I would read, you know, I would look at the pictures, I would read the back of every box cover.
Wait. Time out. You didn't have a rental card, but you just went in to read the back of movie cover descriptions.
Sure. I mean, we wouldn't even go to rental stores, but like if
that's
you go.
Amazing.
But if you went to Best Buy, they would have.
Yeah.
They would have like a rental business, you know? Or they would, you know, it was. Now it's back to. dishwashers and refrigerators and stuff like that at Best Buy.
Right, right. It's all but appliances.
Back then it was all appliances, and then they would have like a media section or like a side store that was like their own little Suncoast or whatever.
Well, I remember until when media CDs became,
you know, easily consumable media, VHS, DVD really blew it up.
Right.
So I would go into the movie section and read all the boxes, you know, and just sort of be like, oh, yeah, okay, there you go, that's a movie.
So you would get a snippet of what that would be like, that film experience.
I know what every movie is about. I haven't seen them all, but I know what they're all about, and I know who's in them and what year they came out. Look, man, look, I'm not saying, look, what am I doing now? In the midst of a pandemic, on a Saturday afternoon, not even, well, it is technically afternoon, I'm doing a podcast about movies. Like, yes, I'm crazy.
It's just, no, I'm not saying you're crazy.
No, I'm saying I'm crazy.
I think it's fascinating that as a kid, you were growing up and you, would you say you weren't allowed to see movies, or you just didn't really see movies?
We weren't allowed to see movies.
Yeah, you weren't allowed to see movies. And do you think that having that restriction made it the entertainment
absolutely
that much
That's
more
That's why
enticing?
I'm letting my kid do black tar heroin.
Whoa.
He's going to, by the time he hits, he's old enough to drive, he'll be like, yeah, the thing about IV drugs is, nah, I did not really.
Whoa.
Yeah, I've been there, done that.
Wow.
Yeah. Whatever you keep,
I don't know if I agree with that.
Whatever you keep from your kids, they're going to want to do.
Yeah, right. I mean, okay, well, there you go.
So anyway.
There's the evidence, folks.
Well, here's the point of the story, and now it seems dumb, but they'd have posters up, and one of the posters they had was The Color Purple. It's, mm-hmm. You know, it's the famous poster. It's the, I don't know who did the art, John Alvin or not Struzan, because it'd be a painted face of all the people in the movie.
Sure.
And it's, you know, it's Whoopi, it's Celie sitting in the chair. She's reading a letter.
Right.
Which is like the last 10 minutes of the movie.
It is.
But what else do you put in there?
Yeah. So, I don't really know.
And I remember like, oh, okay, so that I get it. Oh, what's at the bottom? Oh, Steven Spielberg. Oh, the Jaws guy. Huh, that's interesting. So this is one of those movies that they'd show you in school, probably. You know, this is Roots. They showed us Roots in school. You know, this
I've
is clearly about
seen Roots.
The black experience in America.
Yeah.
But that's the last time I ever really ran across The Color Purple. Nobody really talks about The Color Purple. Nobody really references The Color Purple.
I see. I feel like it has entered the lexicon, but you were quizzing I can't pull a specific example. So
it's in the lexicon.
Maybe it's just in the lexicon, and that's
but
why I
think
felt
that
the
it
need.
Immediately lost all cultural relevance, like after the movie came out.
Yeah,
and we remarked on this. I mean, we should probably get into it, but we were talking about this, like we were watching the film, and thinking, and my theory was that like there are things in the film that are very poorly explained. And this could be just because Spielberg has already done Jaws, E.T., Close Encounters. Like,
right.
He has done pretty good movies.
Yes.
Not pretty good. Like classic
like
films.
Like classic films that are still
Poltergeist.
Enjoyed
Wait a minute.
And loved today. Right.
And he knows how to tell a story. But there are things that just are completely untrackable, come out of nowhere, and are very confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And my thought was, this was a best-selling book. Like, maybe everybody he's playing to an audience who has read the book. We're all now just here to see our favorite book become a movie.
Yeah.
And so the blanks are all filled in for somebody in 1985. But I have not read the book.
No.
And I have not heard of the book being talked about at all for the last 35 years. So, you know, it's a cultural artifact. But I don't think that it, like, still lives and breathes today.
No, probably not. And I mean, I guess let's start getting into it. I don't know.
No, I got to give my, we got to do all the things.
Oh, okay.
All right. So The Color Purple is about a girl named Celie.
Yes.
And she lives in Georgia around the turn of the previous century. So like the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, you know, it's not great as you would expect.
Yeah.
There is not a lot of equality. Either just racial equality or sexual equality. She essentially, it starts off with a bang when she gives birth to the second of her two children by her father.
Yep.
She is essentially sold to a character named Mister. I don't think we ever know the character's name.
I don't know that we do. She calls him Mister. some people call him Albert.
Albert, that's right. Yeah. Right. By Mr. Albert, Danny Glover's character, who is a sharecropper, and he basically needs, his wife has died. He's got about 47 kids.
Jeez Louise.
Somehow. And yeah. He basically just needs a wife to take care of the house and the kids.
Yeah.
And so he wants Celie's sister, Nettie, but he ends up with... the father loves Nettie and doesn't really care for Celie. That's going to be a big thing going forward in the movie. Mm-hmm. And so he offers him Nettie, or Celie. He takes Celie and basically just, you know, that transaction occurs. She has to take care of his house.
Yeah.
I don't know if he hit his first wife.
I don't know.
But he seems like a revelation that's like, I can just hit this girl. And so abuse begins and she has to take care of these horrible kids. And the big problem is that he's still attracted to her sister. So he assaults her sister. Her sister, while she's living with them, because she moves out of dad's house, because I think dad starts to put his affections onto Nettie.
I think he tried to rape Nettie's, her if he wasn't.
Nettie's like out of there. Yeah. And then Mister tries to do the same thing. And so she resists and he throws her out and she basically runs off. And we don't know what happened. We don't know what happened to Nettie's or Celie's, who does a lot, Celie's children.
Yeah.
Or her sister. She takes off. And so the rest of the movie is basically just the life of Celie as she grows up and has this sort of distanced relationship with Mister. She meets Shug, who is Mister's sort of like long lost love, like
his mistress.
We don't really know their relationship, but Shug is a showgirl. With something and everything. And so there's that.
Yes.
There is what's Oprah's character's name?
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Sophia.
Sophia, yeah.
There's Sophia, who is a sort of a friend of the family. And she
she married Harpo, who's...
I'm getting to it.
Okay.
She marries Harpo, who is Mister's son from his previous marriage. And that's a long, ongoing thing. I mean, I can't go through. It's 40 years of their lives. I can't go through everything. But there's that. And she's a different kind of person because whereas Celie is just very reticent and what would you call it?
Cowtoed.
Yeah, reserved. Yeah.
Reserved, shy, scared.
Yeah, scared. That's pretty much it. She's scared. Yeah. But Sophia is like, rolls up her fist and it's like, let's do this.
Yeah.
Got a lot of white people to punch today. and other people come and go through their lives.
Yes.
I think. I'm not sure what's happening a lot of the time in this film.
Yeah,
it isn't, and you go, like, I don't know the relationship between this character and that character, and Harpo and Sophia break up, and then Harpo's with another girl, and Sophia's got a guy, they're coming in, but now Radon Chong's in the movie, and we're doing this, and we're doing that, and it's like, well, look, I'm sorry that you can't understand the non-traditional structure of this family. That's it. It's not that, okay? I can follow Game of Thrones.
I know.
I can't follow this because I feel I'm not being told.
It's not good storytelling.
Well, before we get started, does anybody want to get out? Are we just the worst kind of white people if we shit on this film? Because I've got a lot of shitting to do, but I don't. I want to be self-aware if I'm an asshole for...
I'm
criticizing this film, because I've got some critiques for this film.
I do, too. And I'm struggling with that, but I think a lot of the blame on the not-so-great storytelling... I mean, I haven't read the book, so I'm not going to talk about the book. And I know that the book is very different from the film in some crucial aspects.
It's very different.
I
mean, the essential pitch is the same, but...
Right.
But, yeah, it's very different.
But I'm going to lay a lot of the blame... on Spielberg, because I don't think that he necessarily interpreted this beloved novel written by a black woman all that well as a white Jewish man. And I don't know all of the things, but I can speak about one thing specifically right off the bat. He adds a lot of comedy to this.
Slapstick.
Yes.
Specifically, it's slapstick. And
the tone is just really strange. You have all these bleak, horrible stories. There's incest. There's
pedophilia.
There's rape or attempted rape. There's spousal abuse from both the husband and the wife.
And a banana peel. Look how he slept on the banana peel.
A woman ends up in jail because she punches a mayor.
No, let's talk about that.
Oh, my gosh.
So Spielberg understands, you know, Spielberg will do a couple more of these films, right? He loves to do films about black people and their oppression. Also, you know, Jewish people and their oppression.
Yeah, no, I get it.
And robots. And so, like, we've set up, like, whoa, look, everybody. It's like the straw-colored lady who's, you know, going to come in, and she's the oblivious white lady. And she's a
oblivious, rich
character
white lady.
Of comedy, right?
Of privilege, yeah.
Yeah. And she basically, like, you know, won't leave the kids alone, and she incites this situation where so her husband, like, strikes Sophia, Oprah Winfrey's character, who we've established does not take that kind of shit. Mm-hmm. And of course, she lays the guy out, and then we go from, this lady won't leave these kids alone, to 10 years later when her mutilated face in prison.
Yeah.
What? And then later on, and I'm sure, I know this is probably, I think he saved all the major character beats from the book, right? That's what
you
do.
Yeah.
So later on, like, she ends up becoming, like, the maid for this. And she's clearly has brain damage from being pistol whipped by the guy. And she's got, like, one of those sloth eyes now.
Yeah.
But she ends up becoming, like, the maid for the lady who got her mutilated.
Yes. The mayor's wife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I didn't know they were the mayor.
No, she punched the,
okay,
the white
Sophia,
guy was
you
the
shouldn't
mayor.
Have punched the mayor. Come
he was
on.
The mayor.
You shouldn't have punched the mayor.
That's why Swing
but anyway,
was like, don't do it, Sophia.
Well, then little Larry Fishburne should have ran in there and you know, stopped it, but whatever.
Right.
And so the end of her arc, basically, she'll be in the movie later, but the end of her arc is now she's the beaten, literally beaten down maid for the white lady, who apparently she knows how to drive, so she's teaching the white lady to drive. So the white lady's got gogs on, she's like, whoa, and we're doing all these bits where she's like, well, look out. Whoa! She's driving through town, and it's like, oh yeah, what a great metaphor. I get it, right? Yeah. And then she's like, "You can go. It's Christmas tomorrow. I'll drive you to your family's house.
Yeah,
and you can stay all day with them." So she drives into the family's house, and Oprah Winfrey apparently has not been home literally in 8 years.
Yeah.
So she's seen her grown children now, and her children are like, "Who's this lady?" And and the whole family, everybody, Harpo's there, Squeaky's there, Larry Fishburne's there, everybody, Celie's there, everybody's there. It's this big reunion, and white lady's gonna pull out, but white lady can't make the car work. She's backing into things.
Yeah.
So all the men are like, "Oh my god, we gotta help her," and they run out there, and she's like, "They're trying to rape me.
They're trying to rape me.
Come on, we've got to go, Oprah." "No, you don't, Oprah." And they've got to go. And it's like, I get that that's the point of your movie, is that actually, it's not the point of your movie. The point of the movie is that ignorant poor people are mean to each other, and they happen to be black. But here come the white people, and you're trying to do a funny thing where she's driving around, but also she's going to once again steal this woman from her children. She doesn't get to spend Christmas with them because she's got to drive them home. And it just, what is the tone here? And you can't just say, "Their lives are terrible." I get their lives are terrible. I understand that.
Yeah, but
why are you delivering it in this way? And why do you want to keep making us laugh right before you go, "But racism, gotcha, racism."
It's really weird, and it takes you out of this film. And that's probably one of the worst moments. And then also that character, that white lady, kind of disappears from the film. I don't know what happens with her, but whatever.
It doesn't matter. She was just there to make sure that
device.
Yeah, right.
And I mean, maybe that happened in the book, but I'm sure it wasn't as comedic. And
when I think about it, the book was probably just like one long depressing slog.
Probably.
Because that's what their lives were like.
I know.
But Spielberg saw
that
and went, "We can jazz this up."
It's like,
and John Peters is like, "Where's the giant spider? I want a giant mechanical spider in this."
There was a spider in it.
There was a spider in it.
Right before they find the letters, the spider tells them where the letters are.
There was. I guess the cat was after the spider.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, I'm really tired of this cat.
That's underneath some clothes or something?
That we're seeing for the first time.
I know!
2 hours and 50 minutes into this movie.
What? No! You can't just do that. And then, like, characters would just show up, and I'm like, I don't know who this person is.
I don't have a compliment sandwich, but let's say I've got, why do they call it a compliment? The compliment should be on the inside. You don't have a bread sandwich, you have a turkey sandwich. Yeah, so you're going to have compliment ice cream. It's going to be little bits of compliments in a giant swirl of crap.
Ew. I don't want to eat that.
I will say that I don't know why Whoopi Goldberg is the host of The View, because
she's fantastic.
Yes. Like, this was her first movie.
And was it really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And she, it was at 91 or 90 was Ghost, right?
Something
so she
like
got
that.
Her Oscar then. And I get that she's got other things she wants to do. She's a comedian. She's going to be in a dinosaur movie. She's ambitious. She's got other stuff. She's going to be doing Live Aid or Comedy Relief or whatever. She's got a lot of stuff to do. She's an entrepreneur. She's an EGOT. But, man, like, why isn't she just still pulling down Oscars today? Like, she's fantastic.
The best compliment for this film, I think that... for the majority, the performances are pretty good. And I would say especially Whoopi.
Yes.
I think she really understood this character. And
I don't
think
Danny Glover's in any danger of winning an Oscar.
No, okay, fine. But that's another thing. And maybe this was just part of the time. I don't know if this is how it was in the book or whatever. But, like, the women are all, like... suffering and being abused by the men, and the men are all horrible human beings. I don't think that there was...
Well, it's a feminist, it's a womanist book.
Yeah, I suppose.
And so, you know, that's... I don't think that Alice Walker is trying to say this is exactly how it was, but this
right.
is... I want to tell a story. Like, it's... I think it's a... Up until all the really goofy stuff starts, I think it's like a good, like, little setup. Like, you know, you've got Mister, who's... We meet his dad and realize, oh well, this is why Mister is the way that he is.
Yeah, right.
And then for some reason, even though even Celie didn't really try to raise him, Harpo's, you know, he's a blank slate still.
Well,
he could go either way.
Yeah.
And then but Sophia, we learn later on, has been suffering under this kind of abuse her whole life. And
that's
so
true.
Her reaction is, I'm not going to take
any
shit from anybody.
Back. Yeah.
And so Harpo has a problem with her, and Mister's like, you got to hit her. And so Harpo's like, well, I guess. And doesn't Celie tell him, like, too?
Yeah, she tells him to
Celie's
hit her.
Like,
and I was like,
you should hit her. You should hit her. Because it'll be over. Like, yeah. You know, we'll just, everybody will know their role and we'll be fine. And, of course, that doesn't work out. And Sophia leaves him eventually. And it's like, that's an interesting story about the effects of abuse, but also the sort of societal caste system that abuse forms. And
yeah.
I'm not saying it's horrible.
Right.
But, you know, Celie has a pragmatic view of it, which is let's just go along to get along.
And I think until Sophia, what's the word I'm looking for? Until she approaches Celie and is like, you told him to beat me?
Yeah.
Excuse me? I think until that happened, she just accepted it as a way of life. And she didn't realize, oh, I really shouldn't.
Right.
Nobody should really put
And
up
also,
with it.
It drives Sophia deeper into this sort of violent resistance because,
yeah.
you know, the women folk are supposed to stick together and she doesn't even have that. Which, of course,
yeah,
is healed
later
after she helps her in the store and then she arranges, you know, to meet her kids and all that stuff like that.
Yeah.
And she goes off with her to wherever they're going to go.
Right.
But you've got this poignant story about violence that is centered around the character of Sophia. And then, later on, after Harpo builds his juke joint, we have a wacky bar fight that started by Sophia. Because violence is funny. And it's like, is it funny? Seems like the point of the movie is that violence isn't funny.
Well, and
so when she punches poor Radon Chong... through a trapdoor, like, into the bayou. It's like, wow, what's the message here?
Well, and it was like that whole scene, as soon as she like makes her fist, or even maybe just before that, it was just like a cartoon. And it's like, Spielberg, I know you got like a cartoon sensibility sometimes. You were behind Animaniacs, but like, let's not like put that in this like supposedly super serious Well, this film that deals with super serious subject matter, it doesn't need to be like a cartoon, even if you want to like.
What was that? Put comedic in my notes, it says, this is goofy music for a beating talk.
It was! And there were a couple of times where it's like, why is this music so goofy? And it's like, I'm looking at you, Quincy Jones. But it's like, I'm sure he was directed to do that. You know what I mean?
I guess.
So.
We've got 3.5 minutes, and I want to save 2 of them for the Harpo talk.
Okay. I want to go back to Steely just real quick for a second.
Sure.
So just going back to Whoopi's performance, I think that she really understood the character and she did a really great job of, you know, even as her as an adult woman still being shy and childlike, you know, in her early adult life. And then her kind of like opening up, especially with her relationship with Suge. And I think,
maybe
a little bit.
I have expressed, I think before on this show, probably on Just Enough Trope, that I hate it in films.
Yeah.
And it is just so clear that it is a man making the film when two female characters who are abused or are degraded in some way find solace in each other. And then they just les out. Oh, that's right, ladies. You know that every good female friend you ever had, you've just been tonsil deep in her.
No.
Why do movies do that?
I don't know.
Now, this I jumped the gun a little bit on this because in the book, they have a long lesbian relationship with each other.
Which was not really expressed in the film.
No, and which I think is very significant. But Steven Spielberg left it out because it made him uncomfortable.
Which is really disappointing.
Yeah, you have a
and
movie.
Unfortunate.
And I understand. He's Mr. PG-13, right? He's produced Gremlins, he's Jaws, he's all that stuff.
Yeah. Well,
he
then
wanted
maybe
a PG-13 out of this.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a movie about pedophilia and rape and domestic violence.
Yeah.
It should have just been R.
And it should have maybe been directed by somebody else.
Absolutely.
If it made him uncomfortable.
Yeah,
maybe
absolutely.
Don't do the material then.
But, right. Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah.
Give it to somebody else who's like, we're going to portray this.
So there are a series of weird coincidences in this film. The character of Suge's last name is Avery. Margaret Avery plays Suge.
Right.
Could be a coincidence. She's a singer and actress, and she is also really great in this film.
She is.
Here's the biggest one of all, and I don't understand, and I know I could just go to Wikipedia, but I'm not going to. I want to talk about it.
All right, go for it.
So.
I know what you're going to say.
You've got, in this movie,
mm-hmm.
Oprah Winfrey.
Yep.
And Richie Cunningham and Oprah.
Yeah.
And she is, her character is married to a character named Harpo.
Yep.
Now, we know that Oprah Winfrey's production company is called Harpo Productions.
Yep.
Now, I'm just going to throw some facts out here.
Mm-hmm.
In this movie, not specifically Sophia's character, but just a general air of some of the characters have experienced poverty, have experienced sexual abuse and violence.
Mm-hmm.
That is all things that are in the real life Oprah's backstory.
True.
Neither here nor there.
Yep.
What is going on?
I don't know.
Why is her production company named Harpo?
Well, you did mention.
And.
Go ahead.
It's the insane coincidence of all time if her name is Oprah, but in this book that was written in the 80s after Oprah Winfrey had already been on the news and newscaster and local variety show host in the Chicagoland area, already had that name. Why is one of the characters in the film's name backwards of her name? Discuss.
I don't know. It's possible it could be a coincidence. And I think you mentioned that too, that maybe her production company is just her name backwards. I think
right,
I find it hard to swallow.
Pretty much formed though after her appearance in this film, right? Like she's still hosting, she's still having, you know, a Nazi bedwetters on or something like that. Like she's not magazine Oprah yet.
No.
And so Harpo Productions may or may not exist, but it's existing at the time that this movie is being shot, filmed. Was she just like, oh, that's my name backwards. And that sounds like a great name for a company. Or did Alice Walker create this character who could be named anything, but is Alice Walker from Chicago? Did Alice Walker...
I don't know the answer to that.
She's from Georgia. Makes sense.
Okay.
Did she see Oprah on TV and go, huh, that's a, what if I... So, do you know what I mean? And then also, I mean, I'm sure Oprah lobbied to be in this film, but even if, let's say Alice Walker named the character Harpo backwards as a tribute to Oprah, then Oprah's like, I want to be in that movie. And she ends up in that movie opposite of the actor playing the character who's named after her backwards. This makes less sense than the Fantastic Planet.
Yeah, well,
I know there's an answer. What's our answer? There's a real answer. What's our answer?
I just want to say something else real quick.
No, we don't have time.
I find it hard to swallow that Oprah would name her production company after a character who abuses her character.
Gauntlet Throne. We're now going to find out the answer.
Okay.
No, you continue. I'll just know that you'll be corrected soon.
All right, fine. I mean, I guess she does end up with him at the end. But, I mean, she's somebody who has, you know, was a victim of abuse. So I just find that I would be very surprised if that was
the truth.
It's
not on the Wikipedia page. It was founded in 1986.
So the year after this film came out.
Yep.
Okay.
It's Oprah backwards.
Yep.
And it's also the name of her on-screen husband in The Color Purple. No answer provided.
What? It says both of those things?
Let's talk about my film.
My God.
It's called The Fantastic... No, it's called Fantastic Planet.
Drop the.
Yeah, thank you, Sean Parker. It is a 1973 experimental adult animated science fiction film.
Yeah, no PG-13 here.
It is French, but animated in Czechoslovakia, for what it's worth.
Oh, interesting.
Directed by René Lalo.
Yes.
And written by René Lalo and Roland Torpor, it's not like they're not worth talking about. It's just there's not going to be a lot of context for anybody, and they never really went on and did anything like this.
Ever again.
No, they're both experimental artists and did other films, and I think Torpor was actually an actor as well. Mm. But we're not going to talk about them anymore, not out of a lack of respect, just because this is no way into anything else that we're talking about, and it's based on a book. That's the exact same plot called Amanseri by Stefan Wolf.
Okay.
What happens on Fantastic Planet?
So Fantastic Planet is a science fiction story, right? It's some planet in the universe, and there are creatures on it that look a lot like humans called Ohms. And then,
Go ahead.
And then there are big, giant, blue, alien-like creatures that look like they have little webbed feet, fins for, ears.
But they look like half a McDonald's ashtray. That's what they look like.
Yeah, okay.
Painted blue.
Yeah. Just and but they're called the Droog, is that right?
Oh, no.
What are they called?
No, they're not called the Droogs. They're called the Drogs.
The Drogs.
The Droogs would be a little different.
What are the Droogs? I don't get it.
That's from Clockwork Orange.
Oh. Okay, never mind. The Drogs. See, I'm having trouble already. You're calling this film. There's so much that happens in it that's out there. Basically, the Drogs are the kind of superior in some ways race.
They're tall.
They're bigger. They have technology. They have knowledge. They keep the Ohms as pets. They kill them for fun. They exterminate them because they think they're pesky. They do not think of them as other intelligent creatures, and they're kind of racist against the Ohms. And, they don't really think about living in harmony with them because they feel that they're superior. Anyways, there's this young drag named Tiva, and her dad is pretty up there in the government or whatever, and she finds a baby Ohm and she names him Terror, and she raises him and takes care of him, but she's kind of mean to him too. And she puts a little, her dad's like, well, you need to control him, so he gives her a collar around his neck to control him if need be. But some things happen that they don't expect. Tiva has this little headset thing that goes on her head, and she gets her education, her lessons through that. Well, she holds Terror while she's doing it, and through the collar somehow, or maybe just being close to her and close to the headset, he is able to get the lessons as well. And so he learns and becomes, you know, he knows a lot now too. And he's getting sick of being treated like a pet. And she's not paying as much attention to him. Also, they meditate a lot, and we don't really understand the meditation until later. Tara eventually escapes with the headset, finds some wild ohm, and lives with them. And there's a lot of other weird creatures that they have to kind of survive, and they have to stick together. And it's about sticking together in groups and survival, and also trying to live with or get away from this other race of creatures that basically treats them like they're insects. And that's the basic gist of the film, I would say.
With a couple scene descriptions.
Yeah, okay.
Thrown in.
All right. Sorry. There's a lot.
I'd heard about this almost my whole life.
Yeah.
And finally got to watch it.
Yeah.
Careful what you ask for, wish for.
I think...
It's fine.
I think we caught like a scene of this one time on a hotel TV.
Yeah.
And it's very strange, right?
It's not as strange as everybody makes it out to
no,
be.
No, but maybe like out of context when it's you just catch something
basic
randomly.
It's seen like, it type of sci-fi story. Oh, it's Battlefield Earth, right?
Which I haven't seen. It's on my list.
No. No! Aliens are in charge of humans. Humans are animals. The man animal. And then they get educated and they go, wait a minute, this sucks. And then they're taller than, and they're blue. It's Battlefield Earth.
Okay.
In fact, 1957, this book came out. Battlefield Earth, probably around the same time, right?
Oh, I don't know.
I have to know. This isn't a Googling show. I don't want this to be a Googling show.
No,
but I need to know.
Okay.
Who the hack is.
1982
novel. L. Ron Hubbard, you're a hack. The movie came out, too. They worked on this movie for 10 years, 63 to 73.
10 years, wow. Yeah,
I think a lot of the animation is very interesting, but like when people say it's weird, and I had the perception that this is going to be a real mind screw, it's not. It's a fairly conventional story, and then every once in a while it'll cut to... You know, some weird
creature,
plant animal that is eating another plant animal in a weird way. It's sort of like Monty Python on a different drug because the pythons were on drugs.
Or Yellow Submarine, too.
Yeah, it's like Yellow Submarine on a bad trip, basically.
Right.
Oh,
where
no.
That's all, like, bright
I got
and happy.
In half by a machete.
Yeah.
I can see my large colon.
Exactly.
Yeah. Careful, Dewey Cox. You don't want a bad trip. But otherwise, like, it's a pretty, like, standard kind of story. There is not, it's in that great sort of detached, also French kind of way. Nobody's really acting. It's not like there's, like, great voice performances. It's just like, make your hum fight my hum, you know, and oh no. The hollow bush people are coming to kill us, and yeah, it's just like okay, all right. There's a detachment.
There's a scene where even with the animation, there's a little bit of detachment in the expression from the characters, right? Like there's this one scene after Tara joins the Wild Ohm, and I'm not like the
I don't know what's going on.
I don't know either. Like the wizard is like giving them something.
The shaman of the
like,
tribe feeds everybody glowing chicky nuggies.
Yeah.
And then they all, you know, get horned up.
Yeah, the women disrobe and run off in the woods and then the men follow after them.
Right. I guess this is the place in France.
I guess.
The naked ladies dance.
I get
See, I knew you didn't get it.
No, I don't
it's
I still
just, like,
don't
premature
get it. I still don't get it.
There's a place in France where the naked... Okay, different things going on the girl's side of the playground than on the boy's side of the playground.
Yeah, that's true.
Speaking of music, the music was some of my favorite parts.
The music was great.
I really liked the music. It was very... I was like, man, this is like a Floyd. This sounds like Pink Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody else pointed out on Wikipedia that the music was similar to Pink Floyd's Adam Hart Mother Suite.
Mm-hmm. How did Pink Floyd feel about this film?
Good question. Because
like you're obviously doing an homage or something to their stuff. Did they feel like you were stealing it?
Pink Floyd has a fairly distinct sound, but there were a lot of bands that had that kind of sound, like in the late 60s, early 70s. But call this comfortably dumb.
I see that one I get. Right. Didn't you say that like there was this one point where some of the drag were like meditating or doing something and they were like shifting or changing? And it looked like the wall? Yeah.
Oh, the wall?
Didn't you say that?
No, I didn't say that. Oh. But I suppose. That's on my list.
Or like one of Pink Floyd's posters.
there was that one part where there's a lot of interludes where the aliens are just being weird and alien, and so there's a part where I don't know, Tinky Winky is doing something, and then the two like adult drogs are standing next to a lump of something, and they're going meow, meow, and they're like pieces are coming off and going in their mouth. You're like, oh, there are they eating, or is this something else? Are they reverse pooping? We don't know. And there's one sequence where the dad has three of his buddies over, and maybe they're watching a football game or watching a stag film or something, but they're all like meditating, and then their bodies become like the same but like different colors. And I was like, oh, they're doing the Pink Floyd poster with the butts. They're doing the butts poster.
Right.
But then they all merge into each other and they become different, and it's like, and then the daughter's watching this, and the dad's like, what are you doing in here? So it was like, were they? Maybe they're all jerking off or something?
Yeah, I don't know.
A French guy's jerking off, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of boobs in this.
It's French.
I know.
There's quite a few segments of this where you just go, oh, France.
Well, okay, so not to be a prude, but like the drag, like females, all of their outfits are like, their cutouts around their entire breasts. It's like, really? I mean, at least with the Ohms.
There's
like,
no sci-fi that France can't put its dick in.
Right? I mean, with like the Ohms, like the ladies have kind of like a one shoulder dress sort of thing, and it's showing one boob, but you can. I don't know. It's like, okay, all right. Maybe they're just like, this is fashionable. But then the aliens are like, this is fashionable. I'm going to cut out around my boobs right here. Because this isn't, it's just, I don't know. It's France.
They're aliens.
I did think.
It's the source of their power.
I mean, I know. Like,
did you get like an Aeon Flux kind of feeling to some of it?
Oh, I hadn't thought about that. But yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. Aeon Flux is, shoot. What? I can't remember who came up with it, but I know one of the artists, Eric Kennett is one of the artists who was like a character design guy. But there's some French in Aeon Flux.
Sure. Oh, I could see that.
That's what I'm saying. Well, it's the future, so clearly all vinyl. And then,
well, that's what a lot titties. Of people think the future looks like. Yeah. No, well, titties. There you go. Yeah,
that's it.
Maybe you didn't think this, and I don't know, this came out in the 60s, right?
Well, it was worked on for 10 years, 63 to 73 is when it came out.
Oh, it came out in 73. Okay. So I was kind of, I guess I was a little surprised, but maybe I shouldn't be totally, because when it came out, I mean, I know obviously hippies, free love, and like everybody's having sex with everybody, whatever.
I don't think sci-fi authors were a part of that, though, right? Okay. They were busy writing sci-fi stories that the hippies were like, oh, read this Heinlein, man. But like Heinlein was like, we had a shotgun and he was on his porch, like making sure the hippies didn't come around. He was not that kind of guy.
Well,
and
I
then
just,
Asimov was, you know. He didn't have to be a part of that because he got plenty of tails to pinch at sci-fi conventions. Look it up.
Great.
So I don't know necessarily. I think a lot of the countercultural movement looked to books like The Lord of the Rings and stuff like that. But like J.R.R. Tolkien wasn't out in the mud pit like rolling around with everybody.
No, and I'm not saying that like that was happening. I guess my point is what I'm trying to get to is that. Yeah, there's maybe not necessarily sex specifically on screen, but it's referred to and people are paired off. What I thought was, what I was kind of surprised by, but maybe I shouldn't be, is it was just, male and female pairings only.
No, no, no. We're not. That's, again, France is not interested in, oh, in okay. that. Unless it's, say, the aliens having two female arms fight with their hair tied together.
Right.
And, you know, and just viciously have a cat fight.
Yeah.
And then Tiva's like, well, I don't want my arm to be involved in that. And Tara's like, no, no, throw me in there. I could take him. Yeah, it's not, like I said, there's nothing they can't put their dick in.
Yeah,
but
I know.
Their heterosexual dick into.
Right.
It kind of, it was like the Terminator too, right? At some point, because it's like, the drugs are like Skynet, right? They're going to kill off the last humans.
Yeah, right.
It was this close to going out forever. They will not stop until you are dead. I don't know. But I think what gets me is that, well, we'll talk about the ending where it really goes off the rails. But the drugs know that they're sentient. There's a debate about that. They have, we see them talking and like, So one of them is like killed by you know, Lilliputian style. Like they team up and kill a drog, and they're like, "This is incredible. We have to change stuff. We're going to start cleaning out the parks once every 2 years instead of 3 years."
Right.
This commentary on like bureaucracy, right?
Right?
And then one guy's like, "Should we outlaw them as having pets? I mean, they're so popular." But they start to they know because they find like the nests after they've killed them all, and like they've taken their food and they're stealing like drug food, but they're organizing it like alphabetically and stuff like that. At some point they cross over into these aren't just pets that we picked up on that blue and green planet we went to. Like this, you know, we know that they have like a culture themselves, and we're still deciding to send out, you know, our hunter killer drugs, and then like their little quislings on leashes, you know, to go
weird.
Fine, yeah, those are their Terminators. We need to see one come in and be like,
"What is going on with like the quislings?"
Too.
Like they know why they're there, right? Like they're supposed to find the other ohms or something like that, and they're like,
but
"Okay."
The
ohms
fight amongst
that.
Themselves. They are man. Man did never his brother love.
Yeah.
I hated the. I guess it's a sci-fi thing, but I hated the like the fake words that they made up. You know,
like which ones?
Like all of them.
Oh.
They would, when the lessons were like, you know, the flippitoppus puts the 20 blorburps on their glinglong. And it's like, all right, Rick and Morty, just calm down. Where's
the
plumbus?
Well, and they were like, okay, so they're, I can't even remember the name of their planet. And they were talking
it
about.
It is Yagram.
Yeah, and they were talking about
it is not
satellites.
The fantastic or the sauvage planet.
Mm-hmm.
That is the planet they get to in the last 2 minutes of the movie. Should we talk about the end?
Yeah, let's talk about the end.
So at the end, the humans finally get together after many losses, and they go to the abandoned rocket place where the rockets are.
Yeah, rocket factory.
Because I guess like the there are a spacefaring civilization, but I guess they've given up for like their mental pursuits or something like that.
Maybe.
Anyway, I guess
that's not really
the drogs don't use their rockets anymore.
Yeah.
And so the humans have their Battlefield Earth knowledge now, and so they do what the Battlefield Earth humans do, which is they use the technology. And at one point, a shrink ray is introduced.
Yes.
It's not like I would have rather seen a bunch of humans standing on like blocks, like trying to work like a drog rocket, but they make their own tiny little rockets and they go to the one satellite that Yagram has. It is the wild planet, the planet Sauvage.
Yeah.
And apparently, the secret of that planet, which we were told before is inhabitable, but I guess that was misinformation.
I guess.
Is that. There are a bunch of statues. This is all, I think, done real fast. We got to wrap this up. It's 1962 and a half, or 1972 and a half.
All right.
There's a bunch of statues, and the whole point of them meditating and floating is that their balls go up, even though they look different, because I think this is maybe redrawn or drawn fast at the end. And they meet with other races who have their mental powers. And we don't understand the significance of this, except the statues dance. But we know that the humans are not enlightened. They employ violence to destroy all these statues, and the drogs are like, whoa, no, you can't do that. It's really important that you don't do that. Mm-hmm. And so they, you know, at the show of force, they stop their extermination of the Ohms, and we assume that they have some kind of treaty. We don't know, because it's over. The movie's over. It's over. It's over now. Credits.
It's like the Ohms built another planet, and then like the Ohms went to their planet.
Oh yeah, they somehow then, like, built their own planet. And it's like that would all be interesting to see. I'd be willing to sit around for that if this was like 90 minutes long instead of 71.
Right, and then it's just over. It's like, we're at peace now. We live in different lands because we're at peace. It's over.
The Drogs build a Pluribus line that the Ohms will never be able to create. Don't worry. It's a World War II. Don't worry about it.
Oh, okay. It felt rushed. It felt truncated. It was just like, what? And then it's like, end credits. And what?
Qu'est-ce que c'est?
Yeah, right. It's like, this was all leading somewhere, I thought.
I know, I don't think so.
So that, but that was the most disappointing part of the film to me.
Yeah, when they throw off all this, like, cool stuff. We spend so much time with He's in the Barbie dream house.
Wearing these weird, ridiculous circus
clothes.
She's
dumping cheese balls on him. He's dancing around. It doesn't really, we get it. And then you get into, like, the cool, like, sci-fi war part of it, which the movie doesn't have to be all about that.
No.
But if you're going to dangle that in front of us. And then in an ending monologue, it's like, a bunch of cool stuff happened, but we ran out of film. The end! Like, it was like,
call it a monologue.
Also, T-1 doesn't
like
come back.
Two lines. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you've got, like, if he's the Indian in the cupboard, we've got to, like, you know, have a thing at the end where they, you know, they're on opposite sides.
Yeah. Right.
Or maybe she's the one that dad's going to, like, hit the button that, you know, releases all the gas discs over all the world and no more
like,
Ohm.
Please don't.
But she's the one who's like, no, don't do that because he's my friend or whatever. None of it.
Yeah, she disappears.
There's no payoff.
From the
there's
film.
No payoff to any of that.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
So, very disappointing ending. I don't know. I'm kind of glad that I saw it because now I can say that I saw it. But I don't think it's something that I would necessarily.
A podcast where two people see things so they can say they saw
yeah,
them.
Yeah, right. Well, so I can talk about it now, right? But, like, I don't think it's something I would be terribly excited to sit down and watch again. Let me just put it that way. I don't know. How do you feel?
I think the Savabon of the Glorpus makes 30. Pluribings come out of, I don't know. I think
I was like, what
dumb,
am I supposed to get out of this?
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
There is no pain. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Here are some facts about a fictional place that are not going to come into play at all.
And they don't come into play for the humans either. All we get is that, like, okay, they've
They're
got smarts
stuff.
Now.
Yeah.
Because they heard the nonsense words. But it isn't like they put all the nonsense words together. Like, what would it have been like to have seen. The humans operating the drug machinery or whatever, and then they're saying, okay, but if we get the plurbs into the Savabons, then we see like, oh, maybe they're not so different. Because there was a couple scenes in it where they would do like these sky high views of buildings and remember the Ohms are very small, and so like a boot, you know, they can live in a boot or whatever, but the drugs have big buildings themselves, and I'm going to give the movie credit. I bet it was intentional, but I'm not sure. From the right height, you can't tell the difference.
Mm-hmm.
So there'd be like scenes where we're seeing their
That's
tiny
true.
Little stick figures, and we'd be seeing scenes where there's drugs in their tiny little stick figures, and it's like they're not that different. But you could accentuate that by like having scenes at the end where we see the Ohms using the drug things, and then maybe Terror, who's had the most knowledge, maybe he learns to meditate, and he can float himself and do something to stop. You know, he is the Kiswatsadarok or something like that.
Sure.
Or he's the one.
That would have been interesting.
Yeah, this is kind of the Matrix too, isn't it?
A little bit. Yeah. Yeah. A little bit, yeah. For sure.
Monsieur Anderson.
I wonder too, why
do you do it?
How I guess I would find it surprising if Terror was the first Ohm who got knowledge from the headset.
Ooh, prequel.
Do it, cowards. But there's something about him that's rebellious too. Maybe other Ohms got the knowledge and they were just like, I'm cool with this. I'll just stay a pet.
Here's to backtrack a little. Here's your cowards. Do it, cowards. Remake The Color Purple.
As a miniseries.
There are so many. Yes. Did they ever do it?
There's
you know,
too, this, it's too dense. There's too much so time. Dense. Right.
Every frame.
And take the slapstick out.
It's packed with slapstick.
We do not need the slapstick. Just tell the story.
Yeah. There are so many black female creators now that yes. could do this. I bet Ava DuVernay is like, give me, let me add it. I'll take it down.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, and it'll be on Netflix, so it'll be, you know, a little questionable.
But, see, I really want to see Roots, and I would put that on my list, but I know that's a miniseries, so that doesn't count. And no, it's pretty long.
Does not count.
So someday I'll have to sit down and watch
Roots. I was talking to, I think, Gooey about Roots the other day.
Yeah.
And how.
I don't know why I didn't see it in school.
All right, so anyway, yeah, go see Fantastic Planet. Anyway, so Roots, if you're LeVar Burton, that's like your first role, right? He might have been in a baby food commercial or something, but like that's his first role, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And like, let's see, what is it? Half the movie, I'm going to be stripped to the waist and they're going to be whipping me. All right, well, I better start like lifting this barbell, right? So like, you know, he looks pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he kept that. I mean, not now. He's not going to host, you know, Jeopardy in a tank top. But like throughout TNG,
right.
they'd find excuses to like get his shirt off, you know, yeah. and it'd be like, well, Geordi's like secretly ripped. Jacked, right?
Yeah. yeah.
But it makes sense when like your first role is like, yeah, I'll be playing a slave. But we also talked about how it's weird that it seems like. Yes, there's a lot of kidnappings on TNG. Everybody's always getting kidnapped. But, like, Geordi got kidnapped a fair amount. But he was the one who would always get, like, tortured or, like, chained to a wall or something like that.
Yeah, and I'm
like,
not okay.
Is this residual root shit? Like, what is this?
Yeah, what is going on? That's weird. Yeah, I don't feel comfortable with that.
And he didn't play any real role in Code of Honor at all. Come on. AKA Fear of a Black Planet. They didn't do anything with that. So anyway, that's the kind of thing that we talk about on Backtrekking. I think you should probably check that out if you're even nominally interested in Star Trek.
Yeah.
But you also like media and movies, which you're listening to this. I assume you do.
Mm-hmm.
We look at Star Trek episodes and we find the clear inspirations, such as The Fantastic Planet, and Battlefield Earth.
There you go.
We find the
Except
things that inspired the pieces of media that inspired Star Trek episodes, a lot of TNG episodes, and we talk about those two in comparison to each other.
Mm-hmm.
We have another show on the network called Sailor Noob, where we talk about the anime Sailor Noob, but also other animes in general.
Sailor Moon. You said Sailor Noob.
And I will continue to do that until the show, 200 episodes, I'll still be doing that. But we talk about, Sailor Moon and other animes, and we actually just opened a Patreon at patreon.com/SailorNoob, where you can find more content related to anime and our discussions therein. Of course, we've got the Just Enough Trope podcast, our All Things Included pop culture podcast, where we talk about whatever we want to.
Yep.
And Enterprising Individuals is a show on this network where we talk exclusively about Star Trek.
Yes.
But also culture and social
issues,
conventions, and issues.
Yeah, sure. Right.
It's funner than it sounds.
It is.
It's not dry.
It's not. It's not. It's like entertaining.
You know how not dry it is? It's like a tiramisu. It's soaked in espresso. And a good time. So I would invite you to check out all of those things on the network. And that is it for this show. We'll be back in the future to talk about a different movie.
Yes. Two of them.
Distant ship smoke on the horizon.